We can kick off. So I'm actually quite excited to talk to you because I was just going through one of your WhatsApp products that you
Oh,
do
okay, yes.
with Amigos. I believe that's an Amigos or Amiga.
Oh, amigo.
Amigo, amigo. I don't know what inspired that because amigo is Spanish, Portuguese.
Oh, yeah. What inspired that was four boys in college dorm room trying to find a way we could impact the world, and we thought about this educational app. And then when it came to christening our app, I think we had three or four rounds, and someone, the CEO actually, said amigo, and we brushed it off at first, and then it kind of grew on us. And I was like, oh, amigo, your friend in education. And we printed t-shirts, and the name spread like wildfire. We have never thought twice about it. Yeah. And that's how we became
Nice.
Amigo. And we registered, I think, a month after that.
Nice. That's really nice. Well, let me get right into it. The Diary for Young Professionals is actually a series that is done for a league of young, blossoming adults who are, looking for the 120%. What does it mean to be 120% engaged in your career, to thrive, to be successful, whether it's your own business or in the, big corporates or NGOs? So that's in a nutshell what it's all about. And thank you so much for joining me. You are, well, I believe, the fourth
Welcome,
guest
welcome. It's
so
a great
far.
honor.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. I'm quite interested because you are in the legal field. So I warn you beforehand, there might be some legal questions, but I will really focus on who are you really? Who is Blessing Moses? That for me is like the starter kit to finding out what drives you.
Interesting question. I think the very first thing that drives me is hard work. My mom imparted that on me whilst I was very, very young, that you have to give it the hours. That is the core of Blessing Mau Mounds. I remember when we were in high school, I used to be the last person to exit the library. No one else would exit the library. Yeah, that's just me. And when I started internship at
So
Denton, Zimbabwe.
you were a nerd in high school,
Sorry.
in short, right? You were
Sorry,
a
I was what?
nerd,
Oh no, a
like part
geek
of
actually, like confirmed geek. And then when
the
I started law school, by the end of the 4 years, I had a designated corner that was Mao's corner. At
Oh
8 a.m.,
my
I'll
goodness.
be on that corner. Exit that corner at 10 p.m. when the library doors closed. Became personal friends with the librarians. When I eventually joined my legal internship, one of the top commercial firms in the country, no one would exit the office sooner than me. And I was, I think that's where it comes from. So if you have that hard work, you can literally do anything because, yeah, I won't. I'll admit, I wasn't the brightest. Yes, I was in the top 1%, but I was
Oh
one
my
of
God,
the.
listen to you.
I was one of the. I wasn't
Talk.
the. It's hard work, really. Someone might be naturally
Yeah.
intelligent. I won't take anything away
Yeah.
from that. But if I
Are
work
you
math twice as hard as you,
naturally
I'm most
intelligent?
probably I'm gonna beat you. So yeah, that was me, and that's always me.
I like that. I like that though. Have you watched The Last Dance? This movie about Michael Jordan and his journey
Oh
to success?
yes, I have. I like the Creed, his movie, better because it has a bit of violence. But yeah, I mean, he's a good actor.
Oh my God. I'm going to edit that part out. We do not advocate for violence. But I did like that movie as well.
But yeah, it's okay. You have my full consent on that one.
Yeah, but you know, the idea of The Last Dance is also, I feel, the first episode centered on hard work, putting in more than everyone else in order to be the best. Because in one of the scenes, actually, the future coach says Michael Jordan came to him and he was like, hey, you know, I want to be the top, the best. It's like, if you want to be the best, then you have to put on the work to be the best. So hard work. I do believe that. But then you have the crowd that's like hard work versus smart work. How do you navigate through that? Because, it takes some smarts as well, right? Beyond the hard work. How are you navigating that? You can't just tell us it's, you know, going to the library and reading and giving it your all. What's the secret? What is the secret that you were you constantly in the 1% part?
Yes, I was. Well, at least in the legal fraternity is a bit different because it's a traditional profession. So a person would be able to revise, say, past exam papers and still pass the exam, fair and fine. But if you were to put that person with someone who spent literally the whole of his life in law school reading into a law firm and expect them to work at par, I'm sure the one who read for the test will not excel, because law is quite complex. I mean, we have 371 fields of law, and if you are presented with facts, you must literally come up with a solution there and then. And you are allowed to refresh, but you're also allowed to have legal principles at your fingertips. So hard work in that limited fraternity outsmarts smart work. But in the 21st century, we can't solely rely on hard work, because, you know, there's technology, there are templates, there are precedents. There is really no reason for you to start drafting something from scratch. It saves time, saves resources for smart work, as you say. But I'll put my money on the hard worker than on the smart worker. I'll put my money on the hard worker, because with hard work comes discipline. With hard work comes determination, because if you're going to be spending the rest of your life focused on something, it means that you're excluding something else. And if you're a smart worker, say you'll do something in 2 hours less than a hard worker, what are you doing with the rest of the scrapped off 2 hours? I don't trust myself with those 2 hours. I mean, I just don't. I'd rather keep my mind busy for the next gig, for the next gig, for the next gig. I literally do not trust myself when I have too much spare time. That's why I have taken up reading, researching, and even helping startups in Zim, because I don't trust myself with spare time. I just don't.
Right, but you're saying you would sell your free time in order to be busy.
Not necessarily.
How do you see it?
Not necessarily sell, because at least when you are a young associate in a law firm, you are not necessarily selling your time. You're actually learning, because in college, they only teach you legal principles. They don't teach you the application part. So for the first 3 years, you are literally learning. The more you dedicate your hours, the faster you learn. But when it goes beyond the three-year context, I believe you are now selling your labor. And not even selling your labor, you're selling your life. Because look at it this way. A person has 24 hours a day. A person has 24 hours a day, right? Yeah. And of those 24 hours, you need, say, 6 to 8 hours of sleep. Yes?
Barely. Yeah, I need, let's say 5 to 6 is my.
I need 4, but I mean, an average person, I sleep 4 hours. Say 6 hours. So you now have 18 hours left, right? Of the 18 hours, you need to eat, you need to do basic upkeep. Let's put 3 hours and travel to and from work. So you have at least roughly 15 hours, right? Roughly 15 hours. And then your contract says you need to be at work for 8 hours a day, minus break, minus lunch. So 8/15, you are roughly giving away half of your day, right?
Yeah, you left of your, seven.
Of you left half less than of half your resourceful actually. Day.
You left with less than half.
Less than half, all right. So you only get a limited amount of time in a day. That's literally your life. So if now you are going to be selling your labor in quotes, but your life, you are literally giving some employer or someone else half of your life each day. Sacrificing half of your life, and
that's a lot. That's a lot to take in. That's a lot to take in because giving away half of your this 15-hour time frame and leaving yourself with 7 means that 8 hours has to really count in order for you to be fulfilled, to ensure that you are, like you said, it's a learning field. You're there to suck in all the facts, and in the end to be solution oriented. I want to know, are you, with your 8 hours that you spend now in the legal arena, how do you agree with what you said? It gives you discipline. And then that's something I feel a lot of young people don't learn from an early age to build up.
Okay. The determination, I think I picked up one bad habit to most, but good habit to me. I have a very good set of headphones.
Okay.
I can bury myself for 12 hours flat whilst I'm working on my laptop. Either I'm looking for stocks, I'm doing my programming, or I'm writing my book. It secludes me and gives me time to ponder, time to introspect, time to think and apply my mind, because the COVID pandemic has been really, really bad. But I won't lie, it gave me a new set of facts.
Absolutely.
A time to think, a time to ponder, because for the first 2 weeks we were allegedly working from home, but there wasn't any work coming in. So I really had like 2 weeks to reevaluate myself and where I was going. Wow. And I had a chance to be honest with myself, because sometimes I was too busy to think. I was more like a robot. This needs to be filed. That needs to be argued. You need a legal solution to this. You need a legal arrangement for that. But the whole COVID pressed the pause button, and I was able to think and to reevaluate what I wanted out of this life. And I think I'm much more clear on what I want. And everything is looking up. But the headphones help. The headphones absolutely help. So at least that's where my determination comes from. Mm-hmm. And some very good musicians who keep me company whilst I'm between my headphones. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. We'll come to that later in terms of what you listen to, what inspires you. I want to get a little bit candid with you. You said you reevaluated, I guess, your life, where you are, where you want to go. And you were honest with yourself. What came out from your reflections of Corona times?
As for me, number one, I realized that I was donating too much time to my employer. I could do flat out 12 hours of legal drafting.
Yeah.
12 solid hours. My work was improving. I was getting in money for the firm, etc. Mm-hmm. But that wasn't within my 10-year plan. That was within the partnership's plan to get resourceful young people who dedicate their lives to the firm. But that's just not where I was going. And I had an opportunity to think and say, I think it's best if you invest in something else. I started the two book a week thing during the COVID. I also started working out, like, I'm now a consistent physician.
Wow. Okay.
Whenever I wake
These
up,
are levels.
I have to do my... Sorry?
These are levels.
Oh, yeah. And I then started finishing up my book. I had started, I think, roughly 2 years back, but I never got the time. At least that's what I told myself, that you don't have the time, you don't have the time. But during COVID, that's when I learned that you have to make the time. And some of my WhatsApp contacts are not happy because I never respond like I used to, but at least that's the price of building myself. And yeah, I think the first obligation is to self, and we'll see in 10 years' time, because I'm not viewing myself in a short time framework. After 6 years, I think if we put things into perspective, say 10 to 20 years, you are much more inclined to be committed, much more inclined to be disciplined than for short-term rewards.
That's true. I like what you said. I like especially what you said, this dedication to self versus the employees, which is fine. I mean, people do have to finance their hobbies, their passions, and hence the need to go to work. But I do like what you said, the long-term thinking. I'm tempted to ask you what your 10-year vision looks like, but with the COVID, I'm going to hold myself back.
I think it's okay. I think COVID will last for 18 months. I'll give it 18 months.
Fair enough.
Before the scientists do their thing. 18 months. 10 years' time.
Tell us.
Unfortunately, I don't see myself in Zim. I okay. just don't.
Okay, why is that?
Why? Well, Zimbabwe is a textbook case where democracy has prevailed. Like, democracy has prevailed. And at the same time, it's a textbook scenario where democracy has failed. Let me explain. The people have, at least from what we are told, the people have consistently chosen the government of their choice. Fair enough, that's democracy. But at the same time, I just do not agree that their choice, their election of the people that they want them to rule them is correct. I just don't. So that's why I say it's a textbook scenario where democracy has prevailed, but also a textbook scenario where it has failed. People are allowed to choose whoever they want. Yes.
Absolutely.
But I don't think they appreciate that you actually can hold that person accountable to good governance, to the rule of law. And that's a textbook case scenario where it has failed. So in as much as you can vote by the ballot, you know, go and insert your ex after every 5 years, in a predominantly right country, as in right-wing country, your vote won't count for anything. Your vote won't literally count for anything. Let me put this in context. Say you are a homosexual in Uganda.
Right.
Homosexuals in Uganda get, I think, life imprisonment if they are caught in the act, right? And you want Uganda as a homosexual to accommodate you. How long will it take for Uganda to accommodate you and and your homosexual innuendos, if I may say that. How long will it take? Is it 15 years? I doubt if it's 15. Perhaps 30 years. So it's a textbook case scenario.
It's a very serious statement. Yep.
So it's a textbook scenario where democracy has prevailed, but also has failed. So I think I will go somewhere where my vote can count. At least I'll be able to vote with my feet. I was able to come up with this line of thinking when I was writing my book, and I was writing about the federalism system of government. That's when, as an advantage, as the first advantage, actually, voting by your feet is an actual solution to people's problems. So if you're in the States, you disagree with what's happening in Washington, D.C., move to Oklahoma, move to Alabama. I think we need to apply that mentality into the global village we live in. And that's why I don't see myself in Zim in 10 years. And in 10 years, I see myself perhaps in business. I've always had a knack for business because I get adrenaline rush whenever money's at risk, and yeah, I'll be in business.
This sounds interesting. I, you know, was just thinking of a lot of things as you were talking. One, on the voting part, which is for me, everybody in Zimbabwe has a voice. Everybody can vote. Does everyone vote? That's not always the case. I know I have this conversation with my family and my grandma, my grandpa. They always, always make sure they vote. But having my younger siblings go out there and wait for hours to get their voice represented, that's a tough one. So for me, I also place that accountability to us as citizens. Use your voice. You spoke about the homosexual guy who might live, I know, 30 years of his life. If he's Ugandan, he might not see the day of freedom for him in that sense, what freedom means for him. But who do we place that responsibility to change the scenario and ecosystem of a country? Because that for me is something that is societal driven. Where the state, yes, does play a role in the laws, in the policies, etc. But I also fail to understand how citizens partake in that, because does leaving the country then mean that it's solved? Or, you know, we're running away from the very thing that we fear, walking into the very systems that we despise. If I think of America, I feel it's a similar scenario. But politics is very tricky. I just saw the dissertation that you wrote in UZ, Faculty of Law.
Oh, you saw that?
And I was quite interested in that because it brought about a notion what you're also, you know, driving across with your statements. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Because I feel what you say does hold truth, and it is relevant to a young professional, because the question is, you know, how do you navigate yourself as a professional in a country that you are proud of, or in a democratic state that you can stand for? And if you choose not to, where do you find yourself at home with procedures that are fair and just? But two things. Walk us through your dissertation, and also why you would leave the country. Why, given what you wrote, how that would be fulfilled in you finding a place where you're at home?
All right. First, I'll address your comments on sure. Voting in Zim.
Sure.
Yes, everyone is allowed to vote. I won't lie. Everyone is allowed to vote. But it now comes to the quality that is given to the vote. All right. So in as much as you go and do the 5-year ritual of putting an X where you want,
yeah.
there are hordes of people in rural areas mostly who mm-hmm. will always make sure that their interpretation of democracy is upheld, which I agree with. That is why I say democracy has prevailed. And at the same time, it has failed for young professionals like myself, for degreed people
mm-hmm.
who thought that at least when we graduate, you know, the standards of living would be a bit better. I'll just give a general assertion. I have no statistics, but this is the general feeling. Most graduates, between first to third year graduates,
mm-hmm.
earn less than $200 United States.
Hmm.
Earn less than $200 United States.
I hear you.
So,
I hear you.
Yeah. If you are to tell me that democracy works, yes, it works, because a person in those rural areas is able to assert his interpretation of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
But for young professionals like myself and other like-minded accountants, engineers, it has miserably failed. So in as much as I respect the right of the next person to choose what his or her government should and must look like, I just don't agree with the premise. Not only that, African politics is toxic. Zimbabwean politics in particular is not only dirty, it is dangerous. So if you are to come in and start saying, not even a political statement, just to say, we wish we had roads without potholes, that is taken to be a political statement which is anti-regime. Do you see the premise now? Not a week ago, three women, members of parliament, were abducted, allegedly by state officials, and were allegedly raped, beaten, or God knows what.
Mm.
So this is the premise we're dealing with. So in as much as you'd want to do the 5-year ritual of going and putting your ex, it does not change the premise. If you followed my main inspiration for writing my dissertation, going on to the second part of your question, was for the first time, the Zimbabwean people could actually see the ballot box being voted, the ballots being adjudicated upon in the Constitutional Court hearing. And it's quite difficult, as a legal practitioner, it's quite difficult for you to make an application without blemish within 7 days when you are basing on evidence coming from a country as big as Zimbabwe. So we had 10,000 polling stations, right? And the person challenging the election was supposed to collate that information within 7 days. And then lodge his application with the Constitutional Court within 7 days.
Mm.
So the premise is already wrong, because the stakes are against you, especially if you now take a look at the standard of proof that was declared by the Constitutional Court.
Mm.
The Constitutional Court essentially said this: an election can have irregularities. An election must have irregularities. And most importantly,
yeah.
not every irregularity will warrant the election to be nullified. That's a dangerous precedent. That's an absolutely dangerous precedent. Do you know why? Because people can still be raped. People can still be murdered, killed, beaten. But that will not be able to nullify the election. So what the Constitutional Court did in that case was to say, the courts of law will pay a blind eye to whatever electoral injustices which would have happened in the run-up during or after the election period. The only injustice we are concerned with is the one that upsets 50% plus one vote. So you can literally have thousands of people killed, and then the Constitutional Court will say, as per the standard they set in 2018, we will not interfere. That is why Magufuli, another Supreme Court, disagreed with that decision, because it's dangerous to the rule of law. It's dangerous to electoral democracy. So, again, this is the premise we are dealing with. It's a premise that needs generational thinking. It's a premise that needs, what can I say? Cleansing of the mindset.
Cleansing.
In a generation, because you have someone who's a graduate, who's at home, right? He's not working. He is depending on his parents. He's 26, 27 years old. Still say, this is the best government I've ever seen. I respect that person for exercising his democratic right, but I blame democracy for failing to weed out these toxic elements from, I think it's more of populism than it is democracy, because with democracy, we need to have minimum standards. And that is why I wrote that dissertation, and that's why people who are really passionate about the country, who are really passionate about building institutions in this country, can never get the platform. And if you want to speak out, you might disappear the following morning. So the best thing is just to get out and rethink, remodelize once you're out, and then come back in. And before people call me coward, before people call me a traitor, hypocrite, or any of those nasty labels, the liberation fighters themselves, they had to leave Zimbabwe, ZANLA, they had to leave Zimbabwe to go to Tanzania, to go to Zambia. Some even had to go to Russia, to China, to train so that they could come back in. So it finds support in history. It finds support in history. Imagine before during the colonial era, if everybody just said, no, guys, let's be patriotic, let's stay in the country, and let's not leave, let's not acquire new skills, would we have had independence on the 18th of April, 1980? I think not. I think not. The question will always remain. We need better institutions. We need stronger arms of government. And I'm no orator, I'm no Martin Luther, neither am I a Nelson Mandela. I accept that there are limits to my authority, to my influence. But I also accept the limited life that I've been given. And for that limited life, I ought to make wise decisions. Not only for myself, but for those who invested much in sending me to school, supporting me throughout. I owe them gratitude. They need to see where the money went. They need to see the advocate being an advocate, not just being a nominal advocate. This is why we need stronger institutions, independent arms of government. that is where I want to live. To go away, my talents are best appreciated. I have no problem with working a 15-hour day. I have no problem, absolutely no problem. I've done that before and I'm willing to do that again. But I want to do that in a context that's beneficial, that cultivates the right culture, that communicates the right picture. We have tried, we'll continue to try.
That was the first part with Blessing Mao Maoze. We had, from the beginning, a couple of technical difficulties. And then when we went deep into our discussion, I could not, and we could not, get away from the topic of Zimbabwe and the situation in Zimbabwe. It was, for me, one of the hardest interviews that I have had to date, because Zimbabwe is a country that lies so close to my heart. And I know the situation at hand. My family, my friends are in that. There is a hope that is lost. There is anguish, there is frustration, there is anger. And I could feel it when talking to Mao, who is a young, talented upcoming lawyer who is working so hard. And that is the narrative of Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe is a hard-working nation. Zimbabwe is a nation that has so much talent, and the conditions in the country are things that we need to discuss, particularly as young people, as young professionals who are navigating harsh conditions. So this was the birth of part two. Otherwise, if we had dived into this, honestly, it would have gone so deep. And I feel there are some of you who listen to this episode and are maybe working in conditions that are conducive, where your hard work pays off, where your smart work pays off. And the truth is, in certain countries, young people, we need to become creative in order to navigate in conditions that are volatile and so harsh. That is why this interview was for me one of the hardest, because there are so many young, talented, hardworking, smart workers, determined, who have a lot of support from family, pushing, paying out much money in order to ensure that the nation is educated. However, you also have a lot of graduates who are sitting at home, have certificates, who have everything in order to be a star. And most of our young talent is sitting. And that should be a reason enough for us as young people now to come together, to be creative. It's hard to do, but now is more urgent than ever. And believe me, I think we have seen in a lot of economies, particularly where you have so much opportunity in growing, in developing, in leapfrogging ideas. Let us not look to the West for templates to solve African problems. I think this is where we as young people need to come together. So look out for part two, where I discuss with Mao some solutions. We go through the frustration, we go through the hurt. We went through all of that in our discussion. And we were also determined to give out some solutions to what is happening. So look out for part two. Thank you so much for listening to this part one.